Here.
Miss Flynn.
Recording has started.
Here.
Judge Kelly.
Here.
Judge Siebert. Judge Thompson.
Here.
Mr. Finke.
Here.
Mr. Harrigan.
Here.
Mr. Kim.
Here.
Mr. Riley is running late. Mr. Taniguchi.
Here.
And Mr. Yamasaki.
Yes, hello everyone, I'm here.
Thank you.
So several of you are new members, and I think probably everyone knows everyone, but just to be safe, Kevin Knight was not saying here. Chad, would you introduce yourself for the group, please?
Sure. Hi, everyone. I think I know you all, but if not, I'm Chad Finke, the executive officer in Alameda.
Great. Kevin?
Hi, everyone. Kevin Harrigan, court executive officer, Tehama Court. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. James?
Hi, everyone. I think I know everyone as well. My name is James Kim. I'm the court executive officer in Marin County, and I'm happy to be here.
And then Brandon? Oh, don't, he's running a little late. We'll do that later. Make sure everyone you unmute yourself when speaking. Let's get the minutes approved. They're at pages 3 and 5 relating to April 12 and April 15. Entertain a motion to approve.
Judge Thompson, move to approve.
Yamasaki, seconds.
Yamasaki, second. Given where we're at, does anyone oppose the approval? None. Okay. There were written comments received, so if you did not see that, please let Cottrell know, and we'll make sure that you have it. You'll see in a moment, we will not be making any decision today. So if you have to read it a little bit later, that'll be fine. So that concludes the public comment portion of the meeting, since we do not have live public comment at this time. We have one item on the agenda, thoroughly funded dependency representation program. Ultimately, we need to address the funding allocation. And Audrey Fancy, please, if you could give us a talk about this.
Thank you. I'm Audrey Fancy.
Audrey, 1 second. Yes, Judge Kelly.
Sorry to interrupt. I needed to abstain from the approval of the minutes from April 15, as I wasn't at that meeting. And I just wanted to disclose the public comment is from an organization where my brother and sister-in-law sit on the board. It doesn't affect the actual running day-to-day operations, but I just wanted to make that disclosure.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
Okay, Audrey, please.
Thank you, good afternoon. I'm Audrey Fancy, a principal managing attorney with the Center for Families, Children, and the Courts. And I'm here today with my colleague, Kelly Nelib, our supervising analyst over court appointing counsel funding related issues. We're here to discuss recent funding that was made available to augment court appointed counsel funding for the state. But first we'd like to present some background information on our federal funding program that will give some context for the issue before you. So I'm gonna turn it over to Kelly for that background.
Thank you, Audrey. We did first want to start with some background information about the Federally Funded Dependency Representation Program, hereafter referred to as FFDRP. This program was implemented in fiscal year 1920 following a 2019 change to the Child Welfare Policy Manual, which was updated by the Administration for Children and Families to add and make clear that legal representation for children and parents is an eligible Title IV-E administrative cost. Traditionally, Title IV-E foster care funds were limited to child welfare workers and agency counsel. Following this change, the Judicial Council's Court Executives Advisory Committee formed an ad hoc working group to assist with FFDRP program development. Then, late in fiscal year 1920, the Judicial Council entered into a three-year contract with the California Department of Social Services, who is the California Title IV-E pass-through agency for these funds. And then we began contracting with our providers. In order to participate in the program, providers must first complete an application that puts forth a plan to implement attributes from an established list for the purpose of improving the quality of legal representation, as well as a proposed budget for use of the funding. These applications must also be reviewed and approved by the court before we issue contracts with individual providers. To establish FFDRP funding allocations, we first determine the available funding for each court based on their proportional share of court-appointed counsel funding. We then establish individual provider allocations based on their proportional share of the court's court-appointed counsel funding. The FFDRP reimbursement amounts are subject to the California Title IV-E eligibility rate, which for fiscal year 21-22 is 54%. I do want to point out that this rate does potentially change from year to year. And reimbursements are also subject to the federal 4E administrative reimbursement rate of 50%. So just to give you an example of a potential shortfall, if a provider has an FFDRP contract of up to $10,000 and they are able to bill at 75%, they would receive a reimbursement of $7,500, leaving a gap in funding of $2,500. We do also want to share some program information and statistics with you from fiscal year 1920 and 2021. In fiscal year 1920, which was our first year of implementation, we paid out a total of $26 million in FFDRP reimbursements. At that time, we had a total of 61 providers from 21 courts across the state. That $26 million in reimbursements fell short of our best case estimate for a number of reasons, which I'll go over in just a moment, but it does represent 77% of provider court-appointed counsel funds and 62% of the FFDRP contracts. The total reimbursement amounts were affected by multiple factors, one being that not all activities that are funded by court-appointed counsel funding are eligible for federal match. So for example, individualized education plans, individualized family service plans, activities around special immigrant juvenile status, restraining orders, collaborative courts, and some non-case specific activities. Other factors that impacted payouts were that some providers were unable to implement and match enhancements approved during the application process since we implemented the program late in the fiscal year. Compiling the detailed documentation required to properly claim for federal reimbursement also presented challenges for some of our providers. As I mentioned earlier, not all activities are eligible for federal reimbursement, and we did have some providers that received federal loans and grants, such as PPP loans, which are ineligible for federal reimbursement. In fiscal year 2021, the Administration for Children and Families examined our FFDRP program guidance on eligible activities and expenses. And during this time, FFDRP staff instructed providers to track uncertain items separately. And most of our providers opted not to bill until we received clarity regarding eligible activities and expenses. We did receive guidance and clarification in late spring, and we are now reviewing and processing invoices for fiscal year 2021.
So cognizant of the billing challenges and with a desire to fully fund the council's court-appointed counsel caseload goal of 141 clients, per attorney, the legislature did set aside $30 million annually to fill this gap. The council is to submit a report back to the Department of Finance and the legislature by April 1st of 2022 that addresses 3 points. The total federal reimbursement invoice statewide in the first two quarters of this fiscal year. Projected shortfalls through the end of the current fiscal year as compared to the $57 million that was in the initial budget. And a proposed allocation and distribution of any portion of the $30 million necessary to address projected shortfalls. The Budget Act further directs us to work in collaboration with court-appointed dependency counsel providers on timely invoicing to ensure we have an accurate assessment of what amount of federal funding can be accessed. So with this, we do have a bit of an ambitious timeline, although we do also want to discuss an alternative. The timeline would be this fall to develop a methodology in consultation with providers, so that we could bring that methodology report to the January Judicial Council meeting. That would allow us to develop a legislative report for the March Judicial Council meeting and submit it by that April 1st deadline. Alternatively, we could bring the methodology and the legislative report together in March if we felt that that was a more prudent approach. But ultimately, any unused funds will revert to the general funds if not expended by October 1st of 2022. As Judge Buckley mentioned, there was one comment that was received and sent to you yesterday by providers. It was on behalf of a coalition from Los Angeles, Placer, Sacramento, San Diego, Santa Clara, Mendocino, Lake, Sonoma, Marin, Solano, Yolo, and Stanislaus counties. The comments were generally supportive of staff analysis on how to distribute the shortfalls, and they did address the various discussion questions that were raised in the memo. And I will note some of their comments as I go through each of the questions, but certainly encourage you to read their full letter. We raised a couple of threshold questions. The first being, should allocations be limited to providers who have entered into FFDRP contracts? In our conversation with Department of Finance and referring to the language of the Budget Act, it is clear to staff that the Council is to propose a system for allocating and distributing the additional dollars that will address any shortfalls in federal distribution. And therefore, we would propose a minimum threshold of having a contract with dependency providers. A related question is whether there be an annual deadline of December 31st to join the program to access these additional funds for that fiscal year. For that question, we did get comments from providers that they agreed with the staff assessment that only those providers who have entered into an FFDRP contract should be eligible and did agree with a deadline of December 31st. We also raised, should there be a threshold requirement for invoicing to ensure that providers are drawing down all available federal funds, and if so, what should be determined? And with this question, we do have a number of sub-questions for you. As Kelly noted, there are numerous hurdles involved in invoicing for this program, but in order to maximize the federal funds for reimbursement, providers must make a good faith effort to comply with these requirements and claim all eligible expenses. Questions we'd like to pose to you are, should the allocation method require a minimum level of participation? Should that minimum require that an invoice be submitted for every month of the fiscal year? Should there be a minimum percentage of the contract that is billed in order to be eligible for distribution of the funds? And if so, how should that percentage be determined? And if a provider is participating but has not met the minimum requirements, should there be some distribution to that provider, and how should that be calculated? On this point, we did receive comments from the providers agreeing that there should be a threshold requirement for participation and that providers should be required to have invoice for each month in which the provider had a contract. Alternatively, the provider should be required to have invoice for at least 3/4 of the contract period. They did express concerns, however, about a minimum percentage and express fear that that could potentially disadvantage large providers and provide advantages to those in courts without collaborative courts or other ineligible activities. We also raised with you an allocation question. If a provider can meet the threshold for participation, should the allocation fully fund the gap between what they claim and the contract maximum, or should there be another method to distribute the funds? Given that the funds appropriated in the budget are intended to address the shortfall, the simplest way to allocate and distribute the funds would be to give each provider the difference between what was claimed for the year and the maximum contract amount. At this point, staff estimates that such a gap would be significantly less than the $30 million available. An alternative approach might seek to reward providers who billed a higher percentage of the contract, although that could result in either paying out more than the total contract amount or creating incentives to artificially limit non-eligible work. However, if each provider receives the difference between what they bill and their contract, the proportional share of the funds will not be the same. For example, a provider who bills at 85% of the contract will get 15% of this additional pot, and a provider who bills at 75% would get 25% from the $30 million. On this point, the providers responded that unless the gap exceeds $30 million, the allocation should be fully funded, and noted that failing to fund the contract will work against California's ability to ever maximize federal funding, and that the only route to closing the gap between the allocation and total amount invoiced each year is for legal service providers to receive their full allocation and then be able to more fully invoice in future years based on additional distribution. And I apologize, I'm a fire truck driving by. We'd also like to raise some distribution questions. First, should the gap exceed $30 million, what should the process be used to distribute the funds? As I noted before, it appears unlikely that the gap will exceed $30 million, but we do believe it would be prudent to establish a methodology to spread any reduction in fully funding the gap proportionally or by an alternative method as recommended by this group. We also pose whether the allocation method make one lump sum payment annually or should payments be made periodic, either monthly or quarterly or some other system. In this initial year, funding will need to be a lump sum because we will not have access to it to the end of this fiscal year. However, in future years, the council will need to develop a distribution scheme. On this point, the providers did note some questions about the gap exceeding 30 million and that there should be some proportional system established. They also noted that the lump sum payment for this year is really the only thing we can do and they suggest that potentially on these issues that we defer a decision until a future time when there is more data about invoicing for fiscal year 2021. So for next steps, we would like to ask what additional information this committee would like and how would you like to proceed. Because of invoicing delays for this past year, there has not been good data yet on what percentage of the FFDRP contracts each provider is likely to claim. Many providers are completing a three-month time study to determine the percentage of eligible activities. And once we have that information, by early October, CFCC staff should be better able to provide data to determine a threshold for good faith participation. So we'd like to know what data would be helpful to you, what other information would you like, and what questions do you have for us? With that, I will entertain any questions or comments.
Let me say a couple things. First, thank you, Audrey and Kelly. That was helpful and allows at least some understanding of this. Here's the thought that this is a lot to digest. There's obviously value in getting more input and, if you will, more reasoning from the providers, and also really flush out some of the questions that Audrey just asked of us. So here's the recommendation from at least me, and I've discussed this with Rebecca staff as well as John Conklin, and that is have a working group from this committee, three, four people, and I have some thoughts on who, and do the legwork on this. The legwork has to be done quickly. We probably would want FMS to have some recommendations before our kickback meeting that's scheduled, is being scheduled probably in mid to late October. So I think also that will allow us to deal with the challenges that this presents. So I guess that would really be the main question to you all. Agreement, disagreement, thoughts on having a working group jump into this, and then, of course, get any input from the rest, get questions answered today, et cetera. But I think that's the first question of you all.
Judge,
working group, yes,
David,
no, thoughts?
Barkley, can I jump in?
Yes, David.
Yeah, thanks. I think the idea to look into this further very quickly is a very good suggestion. One of the things that I have been involved with is the complexity of trying to have information provided that the providers are supposed to, you know, submit in order to get reimbursed. And it's been enormously challenging for them to even exist. So if we can assemble whatever committee you're talking about as quickly, maybe a broader understanding of some of the issues that they're facing, as well as some of the realities that are going on in the courts, would help recognize a good strategy going forward. So I think it's a great suggestion, and certainly, you know, if I'm chosen to participate, great. If not, I understand as well. Great suggestion to go forward.
Let me ask it this way: does anyone disagree about a working group? Okay, I'll take silence as no. And in talking again with Judge Conklin and Rebecca, we were going to reach out and ask Chad and James if you would be willing to work on this along with Rebecca and me.
This is Chad. I certainly would. Thank you.
This is James. I would too.
Okay, great. So with that, questions of Audrey or Kelly, you'll have a second bite at the apple of getting to know this issue, but any questions?
Questions open to the group right now, Judge Buckley?
Yes.
A couple of questions. not understanding how a reimbursement rate can exceed 100%, looking at the attachments, for instance. Any idea to the group? And it doesn't need to be today, but I just put that out there. Another one is...
Let me stop here. Let's look at, you said it's to the attachments. Let's look at what you're referring to.
On the attachments, page 12 of 13, 13 of 13, it says reimbursement rate based on actual CAC payments to providers. So
Mateo.
Is what I'm seeing is, for instance, let's say San Mateo, I'm on page 13 of 13, it says reimbursement rate 120%.
Yeah, so So for that, we can look into it a little bit more, but quickly, the FFDRP program runs on the state fiscal year, the July through June, and some of our court-appointed counsel providers in the courts, they run on a different term. So that might be, that could be a contributing factor to those numbers being above 100%, but we'll definitely take that question and follow up on it for sure.
And next question would be, I think that with your statement that answered my next question, which was the deadline of 12/31 application for anybody wishing to apply, that would be for the following fiscal year, July 1 to June 30th, is that correct?
That could be for the current fiscal year. So this program, as long as the contract is entered during the current fiscal year, people can retroactively invoice back to July 1st. And that's why we have the limited data about 1920 was because we got our contract with CDSS in June of that fiscal year, but then providers were able to bill back for work they had performed, which presented a number of challenges. But our proposal would be that since this is, gap, filling in funding, that we need to have some time frame for providers to have a contract for us to meaningfully understand what funding they should receive and then have them have access to this funding. But certainly another date could be appropriate.
All right, thank you. And then just trying to understand a little bit more, let's say you bill 10,000, you're able to bill at 75%, going back to the slides you showed. Reimbursement then would be 7,500 with a shortfall of 2,500. Is that shortfall, if not backfilled, then paid through the trial court's general fund? Is that how it operates?
No, that is money that the providers don't have access to. So if this money was intended to fill that gap, I will note that there are some courts that do use regular court judicial branch funding to support their court-appointed counsel funding, but it's not an obligation because of their FFDRP contract. It just means that the providers have less funding for programming.
Okay, and I noted through a slide that came through, it was a real fast slide. If the funds, if the $30 million is not used, as at least initially it's not anticipated to be used, my question was, where does it go? And it looked like I saw on the screen that it goes back to the general fund. Is that correct?
That is correct. So this is an up to amount of money. It was determined by the dependency providers, sort of using the $26 million that we were able to recoup in fiscal year 1920 against the $57 million, so approximately $30 million. We had numerous conversations with the Department of Finance about this, and at the time, we were still waiting clarification from the Administration for Children and Families, and so it was very uncertain how much money we could get. So it's an up-to amount, and if we don't claim it, it will revert to the general fund October 1st of 2022.
General fund of the state, not the trial courts.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you for those questions. That helped me, that's for sure. Thanks, Scott. Any other questions, thoughts?
I have a question. I'm a little confused. Is this money is for any gaps going forward, or is this for unfulfilled claims from going back the last year and a half?
It is starting for this fiscal year. So it will be claiming for fiscal year 21-22 It is not intended to go back to the prior fiscal years.
And it's an ongoing appropriation?
Yes.
Any other
nobody
questions?
Has, okay. Nobody has an additional question. I have another one. On the billing reimbursement, you're asking a question, should it be done monthly or quarterly or annually? Is this something, are these funds then that the trial court advances to their providers subject to then reimbursement based upon a monthly, quarterly, or annual billing for reimbursement?
I would anticipate the way this would work is the invoicing is all after the work has been performed. So if work was performed July of this year, they are invoicing us in August or September, and then at that point we would know what was the gap for the month of July. And at that point they would have access to this funding. So the question is, do we want to set up a system where they can get this money every month or every quarter or every year? The first year it has to be annual, just given the timing of our need to develop a methodology and reporting back in April. But on an ongoing basis, what would make the most sense for that cycle?
They being the court, not the individual providers, because the court pays it to the, or somebody I'm sure pays it to these providers without making them wait a year.
So the money goes, for the FFTRP, the money goes directly to whomever holds the contract with us. So most of the providers are on contract with the judicial council, even if their base funding is paid by the court. There are a couple of jurisdictions, David being one of them, where the court does have a contract with a local provider. And in those instances, the funding goes back to the court and then they would pay it to their provider.
I lost that last part after where the courts have a contract with their providers. I'm sorry, Audrey.
No, it's okay. It's a little different than regular court-appointed counsel funding, where in the 38 non-draft courts, you get your allocation and you pay your providers. If your providers are participating in FFDRP, in most instances, they have a contract with the judicial counsel directly, and they invoice us directly, and then they get a check from the state controller's office. And this funding, I would think, would travel that same route, although I would defer to our colleagues on the phone in budget services about that. But FFDRP, it doesn't have to parallel court-appointed counsel funding entirely, although there are some courts that have elected to have the contract with their provider. And in those instances, the money does go to the court first, but that's just three courts.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions, thoughts? Okay. So, like I said, we're going to have to meet again relatively soon. Audrey, I'm going to ask you to take the lead as far as reaching out to those of us on this working group, and so we can get the ground running. David, would maybe set up a time that you and I can talk, and I can make sure that I understand some of the issues that you referenced earlier?
Sure, absolutely.
Good. Good. At the very outset, we had the new members introduce themselves. Kevin, would you just do a quick introduction for us, please? I think you're on mute.
Can you hear me now, Judge Buckley?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I think I had intended to introduce myself earlier, but my name is Kevin Harrigan, Court Executive Officer, Tehama Court, current chair of the Court Executive Advisory Committee, and I'm happy to be a part of the group today.
Great. And then Brandon, did you join us?
I did. Brandon Riley, Court CEO, San Joaquin Superior Court.
And Kevin H., you did introduce yourself. I was talking about Judge Kevin.
Yeah, this is Kevin Siebert. I'm the presiding judge in the Tuolumne County Superior Court, and I'm glad to join you guys. Thank you.
That's good to have everyone. Anything else for today? Rebecca, anything else we need to talk about? Anything from you, Rebecca?
No, I have some questions for Audrey and Kelly later, but I'll take those offline just in preparation for our meetings. But yeah, I would also just encourage anybody in the group, if they have questions that come up on this afterwards, maybe you could email any one of the four of us that we'll be discussing, so that we can make sure we incorporate as many of those thoughts or questions into our discussion to bring back as possible.
Okay, great. So if nothing else, Thanks, everyone, for participating. Thanks, as always, for all of the work you do, and we'll be meeting fairly soon. Thanks, everyone. Stay safe.
Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.